40-something questions that he answers in a series of interviews that I did with him. All right, Ben, what ideas do you have for someone who wants to write in someone else's voice?
Well, I agree with you 1,000% because I used to do some work with the golf niche, and I didn't know anything about golf. And even what I did know about golf, I still couldn't quite do this guy's justice who was doing the teaching because he had such a unique personality. So I did what you just suggested. I interviewed him by phone. I had like a 90-minute transcript made, and I pulled content right out of that, his own words, smoothed it out, put in a nice structure, and you wouldn't be able to tell a difference that it was his voice, it's not mine. I mean, it was all him. All I did was, you know, put it down there. You know, I didn't really do much, actually. All the hard stuff was in his voice already.
Think about the 50 emails that you did for Art Hamill. Why don't you tell that story, how you were able to put together 50 emails for Art Hamill, the business buying expert for me?
Well, first of all, I had listened to a lot of those interviews you did because I was helping you sell that product, and I just kind of liked his attitude. You know, he's like that cranky old man. You know, he's actually kind of fun to write in that voice, but all I did was literally go through the transcript, cut and paste sections of it where there was a point being made, smoothed it out, maybe turned it into a little bit of a story. There was this one guy who dot, 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 and then tell the story that Art told in his voice and ended with a call to action.
He was a great storyteller. He told tons of stories.
That's kind of a testament to the way you interview, though. You get people telling stories, and that's something people should be doing. I mean, don't ask them for facts. Tell me the story about how X, Y, Z. Actually, you're probably the one that really teaches this because you do it all the time. But there's some people, no matter how much you interview them, they're just going to give you straight facts and they're going to be quiet and closed up and you can't do much about them. But, I mean, you got people who normally are like that to open up and do some pretty good interviews, actually.
The point is, if the listener wants to get started writing emails, they don't even have to dream anything up. They can just find stories in interviews, in newspaper articles, in biographies, and they can have all the stories they want already written for them. Get a transcriber to have them transcribed out if you don't have them transcribed out. Your words are already right there. And it reminds me of Eugene Schwartz and what he teaches. You are not copywriting. If you think you are writing copy on a blank page, you're mistaken. You are assembling existing copy. And that's what you're doing when you're writing a story email. You're finding the story, or you can find the story that's already been told and already been put in paper and ink or online, and then you're assembling it. So you're assembling an existing story, and there's some elements to that to make it smooth and make it transition well into what you're trying to accomplish. But if you're worried about having to think up all this stuff, even if you can't think of stuff that's on your desk or you can't look in your catalog of pictures or your scrapbook of pictures and come up with your own stories because you're just fearful to get started and you don't know how to write, use the writings of existing words that are already there. What is the single most effective persuasion strategy you have ever encountered? I'm going to say there's not one thing. You know, it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish. You know, I think trust is important. I think when you're talking about writing a daily email, each one of your emails is designed to do something different. Some may be to bond. Some may be to build trust. Some may be to offer great value. So there's not any one single most effective thing. And I did write notes here. You know, you just got to go back to your principles. What's your mission and purpose in why you're writing all these emails? But all these tactics and strategies really aren't going to do you much good. You just got to ask yourself, what's the big picture? What am I trying to accomplish here?
Well, I would agree with you. I get people asking me all the time about so-called dark arts of copywriting. Somebody asked about, what do you think about NLP? And they'll ask me about all these things that honestly I don't know anything about because none of that stuff interests me at all. I just think it all comes down to what this guy named Bernard Baruch said. This was a guy who was considered the most persuasive man of the 20th century. He advised presidents. He advised Wall Street power brokers. He would have all these giant egos meeting in the same room who all wanted different things, and he would somehow be the guy to make everybody happy in that room. And people were just amazed that he could do that because you just wouldn't think that would be possible. And sometime toward the end of his life, somebody asked him and said, how do you do that? How did you get all these people to be happy? How did you get them all to agree on anything? And he said, the secret to persuasion is simply finding out what people want and show them how to get it. It's no more complicated than that. You don't need any black hat stuff, NLP, or any of that. I'm not saying you can't do the NLP necessarily, if that's what you want to do, but you don't need it. You just need to find out what they want. Get in their world. Talk to them about their problems and show them a solution to it. That's really all it comes down to.
Number 12, what benefit statements get the best results?
That's the thing. Everybody wants, like, this checklist. Like, what are the words that work and what are the statements? There is no one. I mean, what works for you may not work for me and vice versa. What works in one market may not work in another market. What worked for Guru A might not work for you. What worked for Guru B might not work for you. It may not even have worked for them, quite frankly. You know, they just saying it did. It always comes down to your market and your relationship with your market and your product and the unique timing in this time of their life, however they're feeling right now today under these circumstances. That's what it's all based about, and it's always changing.
What do you think about using words like warning or similar words that are attention grabbers? I think they could work, you know, maybe once or twice. I think you have to be careful and you don't want to overuse it. Opened, once that email's opened, I hope that maybe it would be a real warning and not a trick just to get someone to open it, because if it is a trick, I think that'll backfire on you and you'll lose some credibility with some of your readers.
People got to realize that email's not like a static sales letter. So it's not like, okay, this worked today, this is going to work tomorrow and the next day and the next day. That's not true. I mean, you actually have to be like a jazz musician. You have to keep coming up with new combinations and new ideas, or you're not going to be in the business very long. I go back to this talk radio on glass analogy. Imagine Rush Limbaugh coming in every day and saying the exact same joke. You know, I mean, it just would get old really quick, or reading the exact same news headline or something. It would get very old. No, they have to keep changing it up. My opinion is that if you're going to use something like warning in the subject line and nobody has seen it in your market, that's fine. Use it. See what happens. But if you're like in a market where people are seeing this all the time, like last chance, you know, one day left and all that stuff, at least try to make it interesting. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. I used the warning in subject line once too. You know, warning, this, that, and the other. I said, warning, blatant testimonial. So I still kind of made it interesting and fun just to read it. So even if it was overused, at least it was done in an interesting way. So you got to always be thinking, how can you be different and stand out and not sound like everybody else?
Number 14, what are the three best ways to grab the attention of the reader and get them to take action? This is a similar type question. I would say to grab the attention, have a headline that offers some solution, or have a headline that entertains them, or have a headline that is interesting enough to get them to open up your email. And then have something there for them that has some value. What's in it for them? Whether it's the entertainment, or whether it's a great product or a great offer. I think there's no one right way, but first of all, you have to have something that's going to get them to open your email, number one, and then you have to have them read the email, and then if you have a proposition or an offer, you're selling something, it better be a good proposition that's attractive and a good deal, and I think maybe having something that's totally risk-free could increase your chances of maybe getting that sale.
You know, I think it, again, goes back to the market. It depends. I mean, there are some markets where you'll say something and they'll love it. But if you said that same thing in another market, they'd hate it and they'd ignore you. I know that everybody kind of wants everything nailed down. Like, this is what you always do and this always works. But email is such a dynamic medium. It's always changing. Your market is always changing. I mean, you have to have something fresh and original and something that they haven't seen before and they're not seeing in the other 20 emails in their box right now. I don't think there is just three-way. I just think you have to know your market. If you know your market really well, you'll know exactly what to tell them. I mean, you will know this. One good thing you can do is, you hear this all the time from copywriting people, say, read the magazines they read, watch the TV shows they watch, and I think that's very good advice, and I think you'll find that if you look at the headlines that are appealing to that market, assuming you're in like a broad market like that, let's say you're in like a men's health market or something, go get Men's Health magazine, look at the bullet teasers, play around with those words, and go with those appeals, and just look at the benefits they're talking about and all that. And that's really the only guideline I would actually recommend for that. It's always about the market first and the words and all that second.
Michael, can one make up stories to tell, or should they always be true? I think, yeah, you know, you can make up stories to tell. Now, if you're selling something, you can't lie about it, but you can use your imagination. You can do an email that's totally not true. You know, it can be a fantasy or some kind of story, and if you can tie it into something you're offering, absolutely. There's no rule that you have to write nonfiction. You can write fiction. I mean, look at all the fiction books out there. You can do true stuff and you can do not true stuff, but never lie.
Yeah, I would agree. Don't ever lie and say something happened to you that didn't happen, but you can always say, there was this guy or there was this girl who blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with telling a story if you're just trying to illustrate a point. I did a whole bunch of martial arts ads, or in 2009 actually, I did most of them, and I was kind of running out of stuff to think about at first, and then I thought, well, yeah, I don't have to tell a real story. Like, for example, I was selling a course on fighting styles used by inner city police. So I told the story of an inner city cop. You know, it was more of a, just a story that I made up. It's based on things I'd seen on shows like Cops and stuff, but I just kind of took the most dramatic stuff and put it in a story. I didn't say that cop had used the course, you know, to do what he did.
Right.
I just said, here's an example of how tough cops are. And if you want to learn how to fight like cops, you should check out this program, yada, yada, yada. And you can do that in emails all day long. Just use a story to illustrate how cool something is and then say, hey, you can do this too. You know, I've developed a program to show people how to do this. You're not lying about anything. You're just telling a story. And you're certainly not lying about your product because you're not saying anybody actually used it. If everybody wants to know something, there's that guy, John Caple. He's like the father of modern advertising, direct response. He wrote this ad for a piano course. They all laughed when I sat down at the piano and then, you know, I began to play. I think that ad is blatantly fraudulent, actually, because he's telling a made-up story about someone who never used the product, saying he did use the product to get the results. I would stay away from stuff like that. I think that would actually be flagged by the FTC if you wrote it today.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. You know, I was doing one of my promotions where I was sending out a lot of emails over Christmas, and I said, Santa elves hacked my computer, and I used that as a story of why I was sending so many emails. You know, it was so far-fetched that anyone who thought that was actually true, and I didn't have anyone who actually thought that was true. I had a lot of comments about it, and people liked it, and I got a lot of response from it. But that's an example of something you can do if you take it to the exaggerated level.
You weren't lying about a product. You weren't talking about a product or anything. Like, you weren't saying people were using the product or anything. I mean, it's a perfectly good story. I thought it was a great example, actually, of a good story. I mean, it was funny, you know?
All right, Michael, I read every one of your emails, and I was wondering how the personal touch is working for you. Many of your messages include events that you have had with your kids and other life experiences. Are you getting good responses with these? And, you know, I think about what you said. Well, I do have people who respond to my emails, and they comment on it, and they like it. But a lot of people don't comment on it, so sometimes it's hard to say. So it depends. What am I trying to accomplish? What is my big mission and purpose? What is my goal? Is it to sell something? Is it to make a point? I get responses, and generally the responses are pretty good. I don't have that many negative responses to my personal and story emails. So it's mostly positive. I would say try it and see what kind of response you get.
There have been times where people have complained, and I actually don't care. It actually doesn't bother me one bit. I just unsubscribe them myself. If they're that wound up that tightly, they're really not a good prospect for me anyway. You know, that's a good way to get the people you don't want off your list anyway, by being warm and personal. And if that's too personal for someone to handle, if they're just that wound up that tightly, you're better off not even having them on your list. You know, let them go. And everyone else who enjoys it, they're the ones most likely to buy from you. So keep giving them what they want.
Right. All right, Ben, I'll ask you, what is your most effective closing statement?
Well, I don't know if I have a most effective closing statement because, again, it changes. I don't really use the same one over and over and over, you know, that sort of thing. I don't test them or anything. I will give some advice on this, though. Try to avoid the word now, buy now, do this now, act now. I know that that's like the most popular phrase in advertising. It's to the point of obnoxiousness, but that's not the reason why I don't think you should use it. I have a friend who I mentioned earlier, Jim Yagi. He tested now versus using today or a specific time. Do it by tomorrow. Do it by next week. You know, do it today. Because people have a hard time grasping what now means. Now is already past the second you say it. And it's weird, but he's actually tested that, and he's found that being specific about the time and not just saying now makes a huge difference. Try to avoid the word now. In the context of telling them when to order, you can say the word now for other things, like now listen, that's fine, but just don't say, go get it now.
You know, I think taking away the risk or making it easy, whatever you're trying to do, is always a good closing statement. And when we say closing statement, what are we closing them on? Are we closing them on to call us? Are we closing them on to click a link? Are we closing them on to buy something? I think making it as easy as possible and making it as risk-free as possible, and maybe even go J. Abraham-style risk reversal, turning the risk around on us, is always a good way to go.
It's funny you bring that up. Because I think that's a good idea, but I also think there's a time when you should do the opposite and actually tell people how hard everything is.
All right, what do you think about embedding a video message in an email marketing letter such as a testimonial or product demo? I don't really know. I've never done it. I try it and see how people respond to it. Maybe it would work, and it does give someone less things to do. If the video message is directly in the email, and the email is able to be delivered and not go in the spam, and maybe if you integrate a story in text at the top and say, just, you know, watch this video here, maybe that would be a good idea. I just really don't have enough information on it.
I know people who do it. I'm kind of with you on this. I don't know if technology and spam filters and all that are quite together right now where you're going to get it always through. I have not tested it. I'm not much of a video guy. It doesn't really interest me all that much. If anything, I'll do audio, and then I'll just put the transcript in the email. So I'm probably the wrong person to ask.
Do you use transcripts from your interviews in your email copy, and what software do you use to get the transcripts done? Yeah, we talked about this. Ben, you gave me the idea. I'll give you the credit again. I'll send the entire transcript in the email. And I'll send a link to the interview. I'm doing a lot of audio interviews. And the list out there, there are people who don't like audio. Ben, you just said you're not a video person. There's people who don't like video. There are people who only watch video. There's people who only listen to audio, MP3s. And there are people who don't watch videos or listen to MP3s, and they only read. So by sending a description of an interview with a link for someone to go hear the interview, and then in the actual email, the word-for-word transcripts in the email, I've increased my chances of getting that receiver of my email to get the information I want to get in their head with as little effort as possible. So I've used full-on transcripts in the interview, and then we talked about taking a transcript and pulling the stories out of the transcript and creating individual emails. I've used it in that manner as well. The other question was, what software do I use to get the transcripts done? I don't use any software. I have a transcriber who's been transcribing my work for years. So I use a real person who gets a link to the MP3 and they download it, and they may use some software to stop and play the audio recording, but they're doing the physical transcription. It is possible they could be using software and I don't know about it, but I'm paying them just to get the transcripts of the audio.
I do recommend it, just because I think it's like pizza delivery. People want stuff delivered to them, and they don't want to always have to go get it. Now, if it's an audio file or video, they might not have a choice, but if you have the transcript, why not send it to them? I've had people say, hey, I printed this whole email out. You really made this convenient for me. I mean, it doesn't hurt anything. And you can always put a link to a website above the transcript. Hey, if you'd rather read this online, go here.
Where is the best place to find swipe files for emails? If you're writing on a certain subject or you're looking for ideas to write about on a certain subject, go find popular websites that have newsletters or that have forms where you can enter a name and an email address and get on the list. That's how you get the swipe files. Go to the best direct marketers. Go to the best newsletter publishers, and you'll get some of the best copy that you could ever get by just getting on the list.
Well, first of all, I don't think people should be using email swipe files. I mean, I think it's great to study emails, but if people are looking at swipe files to like swipe subject lines and swipe actual copy and try to put it in their own words and all that, I have such a disdain for that professionally, but even more so, they're just hurting themselves. Again, take it back to the talk radio analogy. If someone comes on the air and starts acting like Rush Limbaugh, they're not going to last very long because they're not bringing a unique voice to things, or any other talk show host for that matter. You gotta be your unique voice, telling your unique stories, doing your unique ideas with your unique take on everything. And you can't get that from a swipe file. Now, you know, if you want to read emails just to see how people are structuring their stories and how they're kind of pacing everything, I agree then. Just get on some lists. But make sure you're getting on the right list. Stay off the guru list. I'm gonna say this just generally. There may be a few gurus that are okay, but generally speaking, most of them don't know what they're doing. They have absolutely no clue what they're doing with email. They have a lot of traffic, and that's probably how they're getting away with it. But you and I, Michael, cannot get away with doing what half these gurus are doing with our size list. I mean, there's just no way. You have to be very personable. You have to care about the person. You can't just pitch, pitch, pitch. At the same time, you can't be doing this moving the free line stuff where all you do is give free stuff away, too, because what will happen is you'll make a lot of people happy, but you'll get no sales. And when you do try to sell something, people get, like, offended. So I guess my point is if you're going to get on some lists, I'm going to recommend a couple lists. One of them is Matt Fury, mattfury.com. He's like the email master. He's really the man. I mean, if you're going to sit there and study someone, study what he's been doing recently with his new weight loss book. It's brilliant. Who's the lady, Michael, you got on her list, Marquetta Breslin? She sells hair braiding type stuff, which is not real interesting to me personally, but, you know, it doesn't have to be. Just look at how she's telling stories and doing her thing. I mean, it's a good example of a non-guru who can pick the stuff up and just run with it. Believe me, if all you did was start regularly sending emails to your list in the way we've been talking, where you're interesting, you're having fun, and you're asking them to do something, preferably to go to something you sell, you're going to start converting more people.
My question has to do with how to make that first impression with your prospects on your first or first set of emails. Okay, I could see this is probably a big concern for a lot of people because, I mean, I can remember when I first started doing it, I was very nervous about it, and you worry, what kind of impression am I going to make to my list? My list isn't used to hearing from me in this manner, and I can imagine that being a concern. I had the same concern, and I just said, screw it, I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to screw up. You're going to write some bad emails that sound stupid. You're going to get a couple people who say, what is this? And you just got to be ready for that. So you just got to say, I'm just going to go for it. You got to be willing to fail. Fail fast, but you will get better.
I think I agree with you. You know, just start doing it. But also, this kind of insecurity, it's never going to leave you. I'm just starting a new list now, and just last night, I was looking at the emails, and I got kind of nervous about the email I wanted to put as the first one, because the email subject line is Yoda's sex secret. People listening to this think I'm probably selling, like, erectile dysfunction products. I'm not. It's a men's health market. And, you know, that's kind of a bizarre subject line to put as your first one. But what does that do if I put that as number one? It sets a tone that they're going to get something completely different from me than what everyone else is sending them, for one thing. And two, if I've offended someone in email one, they're going to probably eliminate themselves right away, so I won't have to worry about them later, and I can just get away with saying whatever I want later. So the point is just go with what you know is right to do. Tell your stories. Have fun. Don't get too hung up on if people are going to get mad or not. So what if they get mad? Somebody who gets mad because you're actually, like, having fun in your emails and saying something interesting is not somebody you want on your list anyway. When I first started writing like this, I actually kind of eased into it. I started doing one a week, and then I kind of got into daily. I did it over a couple weeks. You know, I got rid of all the crud and all the bottom feeders pretty quickly. If anything, I wish I'd done it faster. You want to get rid of the bottom feeders. Believe me, they are just clogging up bandwidth. You don't need them. They're never going to buy from you. Let them go haunt somebody else, and just don't worry about it.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com. How much of each email should be used to give new information or education in telling stories, and how much should be used selling my product or service? Okay, that's a good question. I think you should mix it up. It's like I used the example. I have done 4 emails in a row that include a story and include some entertainment and something interesting, but I am marketing a marketing consulting course. But today I changed it up, and I just sent out a straight new interview with Brian Tracy. I'll do that also after I'm promoting a product. I did a series of $20 offers for some pretty expensive products that I did really, really well with. And I was pushing the limit, and I would sometimes do 3, 4, 5 emails a day. I mean, I'm always testing the limits of my list, and it's been very interesting. But after that, for the next week, I may just send great stories. I may send a free gift. I may send links to some new interviews.
I think that people have to realize that teachers make almost no money in this society. I guess we could get into the politics of it. Maybe they make some money compared to other people, but compared to like a salesperson, they're not making anything. People who sell make the money. I really think everybody should be selling something, even if it's just a link or something. But I am big on telling people what to do, but not how to do it. So for example, let's say I'm writing to a weight loss list or something. I might tell them all the benefits of drinking more water. People who drink more water lose weight. But then I will transition to that toward the end, toward the last half of it. But you need to know how much water to drink, because if you drink too much water, it'll have the opposite effect. You know, you want to make sure you drink the right kind of water, and you don't want it to be tap water or bottled water. You know, and I'll start teasing them about all the stuff that they shouldn't be doing. You're dangling the carrot. Yeah, you have given valuable information by telling them to drink more water, but they don't know how to do it unless they get your product. People actually like that. You won't really get very many complaints doing that, and actually you'll get a lot more sales. So I think people should just kind of focus on giving what I call soft information versus hard information. And soft information is you're giving general concepts that really isn't necessarily that mind-blowing, but it's still useful. And then you just kind of want to tease them into your product where they'll get the real lesson.
Should I start selling from the beginning of the series or start with education and then gradually transition into selling later?
I have heard seasoned marketing people who really don't know what they're doing tell me, well, you have to do this thing. You have to incubate them. You have to give them a whole bunch of cool stuff up front and don't sell anything. And then you will have earned the right to sell them something later. I think that is like the worst thing anybody can do. The very first email that you send out should have something for sale. It doesn't have to be a blatant pitch. Do what we've been talking about, you know, give some value and have fun and all that. But definitely let them know you're in business right away. I interviewed Terry Dean. Terry Dean is like the father of modern email marketing, or he's certainly one of them. He's been doing this since most of us before any of us even had a computer in some cases. And he tests this stuff all the time. He says like the very first email someone gets in his funnel, he sells them something. It's not like this blatant thing where he's trying to turn you off or anything, but he's going to let you know with a solid little pitch at the end, he's in business, you better expect this, there's more to come. He's trying to help you, he's trying to give you value. It might not be an expensive thing, but he does set that tone right away. And this whole idea of moving free lines and incubating, I just think it's absolutely retarded. It makes no sense. There's not one salesperson I've ever met who does that. Now, back in the day of door-to-door sales, they used to do stuff like that, but we're not doing door-to-door sales. It's not that hard of an environment. And if you're targeting your market properly and if you have the right solution to their problem, you're doing them an absolute disservice by not letting them at least know that it exists.
I see what you're saying. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that. Look, you know, when I started, before I was really selling anything, I was just giving it all away for free, you know.
Oh, hey, believe me, I was doing the same thing. I'm as hard on myself as
I am. Yeah.
I did it too, man. I mean, I think we all have done that.
Now, I'm just thinking about this, the moving the free line. I think this is also a list building strategy. And I think this is primarily how I've tried to use it. You're giving something of real value for free. And it will build a list. And look, if you don't have a list, you can't sell anything to anyone.
Oh yeah, definitely. You have to build the list with the free stuff, but all I'm saying is the first email they get. Oh yeah, by all means, give away free stuff to demonstrate your knowledge and build credibility. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But once you're emailing them, man, I'm not saying be blatant. I'm not saying shower them with sales pitch. I'm just saying do what we've been talking about, you know? Tell some stories. Just get them hooked on you. Don't buy from them. They trust you.
All right, what is your formula for selling versus content that you use when emailing your list? I mean, I've talked about this before. I'm always selling something, whether I'm building trust or I'm trying to build likability or I'm offering value or I'm even guilty of doing some teaching through my interview or I'm doing a blatant offer, a risk-free offer on a product or service. So there's no real formula. I'm always testing. I'm always trying different stuff. And any of the listeners who are interested in doing email marketing should do the same. There's no rules. You know, there's so few people doing this. It's like we're making the rules as we're going along.
I agree with you. There are no rules. You know, even the stuff you and I are saying, somebody should actually break it just to see if it works for them. And, you know, I'm just giving guidelines of what worked for me, but honestly, there's some stuff that I'm saying right now that won't work for everybody. You know, maybe some people should incubate, you know? I don't know. I've never seen it be the case, but yeah, I agree with you. There are no rules. These are just guidelines, if anything.
Okay. What is the most effective viral marketing mechanism that one can use in email marketing without annoying our current clients? Here we go again. We're worried about annoying our current clients. How do you know you're going to annoy your current clients? You have no idea because every single one of those people on your email list are different. So you can't be a people pleaser. You are not going to please everyone on your list. Some will, some won't, so what?
Well, one good viral mechanism is actually telling really good stories. People like to forward good stories to people, and they'll retweet them, and they'll put them on Facebook, and that's one way to do it, is get good at telling these stories.
There you go. Hi, it's Michael Senoff, and if you like what you've been listening to in this 10-part series with Ben Settle on email, I want to introduce an incredibly advanced system on selling that can be used in your one-to-one phone call conversations, in all of your email correspondence, and or integrated into your written sales letters. Go to www.hardtofindseminars.com/HSSOE.htm. Or you could just go to Google and search these words, the highest paid salesman on earth, and you'll find a link to an incredible product that will only enhance all your selling efforts, whether it's one-to-one phone conversations, emails, or in your sales letters. Check it out at hardtofindseminars.com/HPSOE.htm. That's the end of part two. Please continue to part three.